This has got you written all over it. The Mets stayed in a Pittsburgh hotel that also hosted a convention of people dressed up as furry creatures.
Oh, no.
Is this Wilbon's worst nightmare?
No, it's worse than my worst nightmare. My worst nightmare is mascots.
Look at that.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
What are they thinking, Bobby?
All right, let me tell you something. Here's the real story here. In 40 years worth of being on the road, traveling around this great land of ours, checking into countless hotels of all stripes, here's what I've learned. There's a frightening amount of subcultures out there, Mike, and they all have conventions.
Yeah, but you've never
and
seen
I
these people.
I want to understand one thing.
I've never seen them.
Stay away from me.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, of course, when you take it at face value and believe the crap that NASA is our manned space program, yeah, it's frustrating and it's disheartening. But when you look at the actual history of the U.S. Army Air Corps and then it became the U.S. Air Force, when you go back and look at guys like Colonel Harry Armstrong, and then when you look at Otis Benson who followed him, and I go into this in my book Shimmering Light, okay, the history of the U.S. Air Force, in my opinion, secret space program development is all right there, and you can find it in Air Force history. Harry Armstrong, back in the 20s and 30s, was researching, was on the cutting edge of the American research into the effects of high altitude on, air crews and pilots, okay? Otis Benson picked up the torch, and Otis Benson from the get-go was pushing for manned space travel. Okay? Now, NASA, by the way, the U.S. Air Force's pursuit for this, okay, is what really fueled Operation Paperclip. Yeah, there was the issue with they needed the guys to, develop the bomb, of course. All right? But the lesser-known part of Operation Paperclip, and this is in Paperclip history, folks. This isn't just speculative stuff. Okay, the lesser-known part is the one branch of service that was driving Operation Paperclip the hardest and the most was the United States Air Force.
Ah, interesting. Okay.
And they wanted the aerospace guys. They wanted the guys, Benson specifically, okay, in U.S. Air Force Aerospace Medical Research Division, specifically wanted the Germans who could advance putting man in space. Okay, now NASA, some people know it, a lot of people don't. NASA, okay, is part of the Defense Department, all right? Project Mercury, which the movie The Right Stuff is about, okay, it was first a U.S. Air Force program. When NASA was stood up in 1958, Mercury was handed over to them, okay? But the U.S. Air Force was never told to stop pursuing this, okay? And I argue, again, referring to my book Shimmering Light, I lay out the history of this, and I argue that the Air Force continued to develop their manned space program. Now, again, we're not talking about some ridiculous advanced Battlestar Galactica Star Trek thing that's been going on since the 1950s. All we're talking about is a parallel space program where, yeah, I argue the U.S. Air Force has been launching manned missions into space all along. Since when NASA started it, the Air Force was doing it. Now people say, oh, Walter, that's ridiculous. I have a very good friend of mine, a lifelong friend, who just scoffed at that and said it's ridiculous. And like, why is that ridiculous? Well, because if there's a human being on board a rocket, we know about it because of all the telemetry and the this, that, and the other, blah, blah, blah. Well, I argue this. Okay, when they launch a missile from Vandenberg, now remember, I was an Air Force OSI agent. My supervisor, okay, I was at LA Air Force Base. That's a rocket design base, okay? The things that go on with rockets go on at LA Air Force Base. And I was, involved with program protection, okay? Now, my boss, my immediate supervisor, was our agent representative to whenever the missiles, the rockets, and advanced classified aircraft stuff was being transported on the ground, okay? She was the OSI agent who went with them. Okay, and I was exposed to what I'm talking about here, okay? Mm-hmm. When they launch a U.S. Air Force rocket from Vandenberg, very, very often the payload is classified. The payload is delivered in a pod, okay? Now, I've heard guys say, well, my uncle was a tech sergeant there at Vandenberg, and this is bullshit what you're saying, Bosley, because my uncle was a tech sergeant involved with launches. Well, that's nice that your tech sergeant uncle was involved with launches. That doesn't mean he knew what was in that payload, okay? And that payload, if delivered in a pod, okay, just for grins and chuckles, the manned crew could be put inside the payload pod, okay, which has its life support systems, all right, and the telemetry and all that, whatever you want to point out, could be classified on classified means, classified channels, and they deliver that pod, and those technicians launching that rocket could have no idea that there are people on board that rocket. It is possible, and therefore, if it's possible, it must be considered that it has been done and is being done.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I don't have any problem entertaining that notion at all. You know, it's like they launched some secret satellite that no one knows what it even does. So who the fuck, you know, that's, we know that for sure, you know.
And that's just rockets now. That's just rockets. We know that, for instance, SR-71 pilots have astronaut wings, okay? And, you know, how long has that thing been around? You know, and it goes, you know, they say it goes suborbital, okay? Another little thing that the military has always liked to do is lie about the ceilings of their aircraft for good reason. You know, oh, this aircraft goes to this many hundreds of thousands of feet when actually it can go double that, perhaps, or, you know, another 50%. You know, because you don't want the opposition to really know the... you know, the limits or the extent of the capabilities of the platform. And, you know, so between the shuttles and between the mysterious Aurora aircraft that people have been talking about, you know, I would venture to say the United States Air Force and the United States Navy has plenty of options for getting people up in space. So,
well, what the hell do you think they're doing up there?
I think that would be kind of obvious. There's probably orbital, you know, defense stations. You mentioned the moon. I don't for a minute think we stopped going to the moon. You know, they had this on the books in the 50s, building moon stations. What makes us think that they didn't do it? And if you take my premise that I just laid out, wow, okay, it's very possible that, you know, they might have a defense station, you know, communications or observation, whatever. You know, you could list a whole bunch of military needs. It's defense-related stuff primarily, but I think there's also probably exploration involved in that.
Yeah,
that's why I personally, I have no evidence other than the kinds of things we talk about and stuff. That's why I personally think we've put boots on the ground on Mars.
Well, if you get a base on the moon, it's easy to get to Mars relatively because it's a lot more with the gravity and shit, right?
It's not it's a longer trip. There's resources, blah, 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 blah. I mean, come on. It's 2017. Yeah, I think we've put boots on Mars easily since, you know, 1970. And I mean, it wasn't easy. I don't mean – when I say easily, I don't mean it was likely it's quite a venture. But, you know, come on, it's 2017. Yeah, I think we've done it. I don't think it's unreasonable.
No. The only thing that's like, I wouldn't even call it unreasonable. It's more or less like frustrating in a sense where it's like, why the fuck are they keeping this a secret from us, dude? It's not fair. Like,
maybe they do indeed know something. Let's entertain the possibility. Maybe they do know of some threat that... for whatever reason, or here's the possibility. All these people, you know, they get a Woody over disclosure. Disclosure, disclosure, you know, for what we've listened to, what, four presidents now are going to be the disclosure president? Okay, this guy's it. He's going to be the disclosure president. Come on, guys, disclosure, yay. You know, we've been hearing about this. You know what? Maybe those who they want disclosed don't want to be disclosed. I say the ETs, the off-planet people, whoever they are, I think they're driving that train. I think they're saying, no, you will not disclose us. I think that's very possible.
Yeah, I think that's – the more I've gone into this, the more I think, like, yeah. There's, like, three – to steal a sort of phrase, like, from you were saying before, it's like the three camps in a sense. It's, like, the people that are, like, you know, the disclosure people say, oh, the government's just keeping it a secret. That's, like, the basic, you know. And then it's, like, the aliens, whatever they are – let's – don't jump on me, folks. They don't want us to know. So, the you know, then there's just the whole thing that it's like completely, we just can't figure it out. Nobody knows, you know.
Yeah.
We don't even know if the aliens are the other, that's probably the best way to put it, even gives a fuck, of, you know, because there's nothing to disclose, because we don't know what it is. So.
Well, and the disclosure crowd, you know, they don't. It doesn't even cross their mind to think that maybe, you know, the others don't want to be disclosed. They're so wrapped up in believing that, you know, there are cosmic angel space brothers that want so much to lift our souls to a vibration to save the world that, you know, that evil, nasty, you know, American military and NASA and stuff is, you know, the only stumbling block. Give me a break. If you're talking about this civilization the way they describe them and believe them to be, they would just laugh if they wanted to be disclosed and shove the government aside and say, here we are, everybody. So, but you never hear these people because it's wishful thinking. What it is you got a lot of people, they really think that they see themselves as Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters. Where, you know, someday it's going to come out of the sky and the little aliens are going to come down and lift them on their little fingers and effervescently take them away to the other world. And this is the fantasy they live under. Or they think they're Elliot from E.T. and they have a heart connection. You know,
and there's also they think they're Woodward and Bernstein, or they think they're like,
yeah,
you know, they think that they're going to be the one to break this.
Yeah, exactly.
Open. It's like, do good luck.
They're gonna, and think about that. What are we talking about here? Where it's back to the self, that particularly the guys that think they're going to be the ones to break it. Okay, so what's your motive? Is your motive really to find the truth, or is your motive to be the guy? And here's another little thing. I think you've been involved in a conversation like this that I've had with Greg and others. I think these others, I mean the others with the big O, not other people we've talked with, I think these others, this other race, these beings or whatever, there's a factor here where somehow the individual's intentions are involved with how much they learn or how much they find out.
Right.
Or how much, right? Where if their intention seems to be true and noble, so to speak, I'm searching for words here, then, you know, they like that. They'll show them a little more. Maybe they'll, you know, reveal a little more truth or whatever.
If you think about it, if you take that to an even deeper level, it's like, I mean, I like the human race. It's done a lot of good things. I'm a part of it, of course. But at the same time, we have to agree that it's kind of a shitty species. So it's like, we may not have earned admission into the understanding club. You know,
how do we know they're so much better than we are? I argue they're just like us. They're just like us. They just have better technology or advanced technology. That's all.
Yeah, I think if anything, I wouldn't say they're better than us. Yeah, they're like, in a sense, I think we're now we're getting like really interplanetary xenophobic here, but species xenophobic. But they like have like a hive mind, it seems. So to me, it's like, if we're talking about aliens per se, it's like
I'd rather be a
human than an alien, dude. We're unique and interesting. They're like fucking boring.
If they're the Greys, yeah, you know, these robotic things. There's another little dirty secret. I honestly think that, you know, that there's human beings exactly like us out there. Now, some people say, that's impossible because scientists say that, you know, the human beings like us could only develop here on this planet. It's like, you know what, until some scientist has gone to every world, every planet in the known universe, okay, and proven that there is no other Earth-like planet just like ours, they cannot say that. Okay, there could be Earths exactly like this one here, and there could be human beings exactly like us here. And until somebody goes and visits every planet in the known universe, that kind of crap cannot be fallen back upon. You can't argue that. So I think there's human beings that, and again, going to Hoagland, and I agree with this. I've agreed with this for years that, you know, human race has its origins, you know, elsewhere. Specifically, he says Mars. Why not?
Yeah, no. I mean, like we were talking about earlier, it's like in the annals of shit I want to be true, I've always been a sort of believer in the idea that. That Earthlings came from Mars, essentially. You know, that's kind of my. I really hope that's true, because to me, it like makes more sense.
It'd be cool.
Yeah.
It'd be really cool.
Well, let me put it this way. I think that I just hope and think that like the origin of our species is not like the way they told us it is. You know what I mean? Like, we didn't just crawl out of the fucking water as amoebas and shit and turn into...
Through that.
Yeah. So it's
that.
Like, okay. Something fucking happened. Something awesome and cool, I hope, presumably.
Yeah, and to bring it back to the whole beginning of our discussion here, I want to point something out. Notice we've gone off on, you know, our various threads here and wow, this, wow, that crazy thing. Notice the words we're using. We speculate. We think. We hope. Wow, wouldn't it be interesting if?
Right.
Okay, listen to the terms in which we have this discussion. And you listen to all the examples. I whipped out my books here and I pointed to this historical figure and that document, blah, blah, blah. Notice the difference between the discussion we've been having when we've begun to throw things out there and what these so-called whistleblowers do. Okay? We, at no time, you know, did I don't think I've said, it's an absolute fact what I'm saying here, this crazy thing or that crazy thing to somebody, okay? You know, and that brings us back to the beginning. The whole reason that I get frothed up and worked up over what these whistleblower guys are doing is because they just come out and they state this stuff without any caveat to it at all, without any evidence, without any documentation, and they're just being given the center ring at the big circus, and serious researchers better than me, doing this longer than me, are just being pushed aside and marginalized, you know, and virtually ignored.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's tragic.
Right. Well, they can't add caveats. They can't be like, because they're just, it's just like their story. You know what I mean? That's why I've always had a hard time even with people who have just general, like, an abductee or something. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just, I don't know what I can do with your story, dude, you know? And it's like, I feel like a dick in a way, because it's like any critical questions I might have, it's like, comes off as like, I don't believe you, but it's like, there's no other, you know? Otherwise, what do I do? Go, ah, shucks, that's wicked cool. And then what happened? Like, that would be the other fucking option for an interview, and I would, like, shoot myself.
And not to say that there's not people out there experiencing real things.
No one's saying that. Yeah,
I think they are. I think there are people experiencing just really weird stuff and these otherworldly things, what we call otherworldly. They they come away with, you know, no physical evidence, and it's no fault of their own. You know, what we can do is listen to these stories, document what they say, you know, have it there available so that as maybe certain physical evidence pops up, we can go to that file and say, oh, wait a minute, this object or this document finally backs up what this experiencer said. See,
exactly.
And so there's absolutely, of course, value in these stories. So I don't believe in throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I don't believe in just discounting all experiencers just because these whistleblower guys are full of crap, you know.
No. Yeah. I mean, this stuff, like, I think I heard somewhere, it might have been from you. Now, we're going to hit, like, the top of the hour. You want to keep going for a while? Because we've, like...
However long you want to go, long as this is interesting to you and your listeners.
I'm having a blast, and I assume they are, too. And if they're not, hey, it's my last season, so I can do what I want, right?
Okay.
What I think, yeah, I lost my train of thought there because I was being clever, but... but
me?
Oh, yeah, these whistleblowers and shit. Yeah, I mean, it's, at the end of the day, it's just like their story, and there's not really much you can do with it. And it's like, that's what I was going to say. I think it was you, because you're the one who was sort of my main conduit to following a lot of this drama and shit. And it's like, did Dolan say at MUFON that, like, I guess the point I wanted to make, and I was going to make it, and then I was like, oh, I think Dolan said that. That's how I got off this train of thought, was these people need to, like, have some kind of fucking proof. You know what I mean? Or else they got to, like, seed the microphone. You know what I mean? Because they remind me of people, and I don't know how, I'm sure you've been to a lot of these conferences, but they do, like, the Q&A thing, you know, at the end. And there's always, like, one guy who fucking, if it's an hour-long Q&A, there's always one guy who takes, like, 10 to 15 minutes and eats, like, a quarter of it so he can fucking, you know, just ruin it.
They had people try to do that at the San Mateo Secret Space Program Conference. and they shut him down. They said, you know what, no, we need to pass the mic, get another question in here. And the beauty was most of the crowd was, you know, telling them to, you know, to stop.
Get to the point. That's the thing, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Get to the point or, as you said, hand over the mic. My understanding is that, yes, at this closing panel at the MUFON thing in Vegas, my understanding is that Dolan said exactly that, that it's time that Corey Good and Basiago and Tompkins and these guys, they have to start providing some type of documentation or evidence or something that is either verifiable or falsifiable, that we just cannot, as you say, continue with the spotlight and the mic, you know, being hogged by them and applauding them and exalting them, and they're giving nothing, you know, other than their story.
Right.
And yeah. He says that, you know, essentially, I'm paraphrasing, and essentially they've had their time. It's either put up or shut up.
Well, that's ironic in a sense, too, because I don't know how you feel about this whole thing, because it was funny. Somebody mentioned this on my Twitter. It was like, I got that distinct impression. I'm one of the few people who got to interview Gary McKinnon back during the drama when he was facing deportation or whatever it's called. What is that called? Extradition. And I interviewed him, like, 10, 11, 12 years ago. And I came out of it feeling like, you know, with all due respect to him and whatever the fuck legal plight he was involved in and everything, he came off to me as exactly like one of these whistleblower dudes. Like, he didn't have anything to offer as far as anything you could pursue to actually verify what he was talking about. Mm-hmm. And I said to him in the interview, I'm like, dude, you know, we need a name. We need, like, anything that we can just, like, dig into. And he said, oh, you know, I was so fucked up when I did all this that I don't remember anything like that.
Oh, how convenient.
Yeah. So to me it was like, I think, honestly, he just got busted for hacking into some computers and shit and made up a crazy story in the hopes that that might get him out of it. You know what I mean?
Well, and, you know,
but who knows? There may be, like, a lot of layers of espionage involved, too.
Well, people, yeah, there you go. People point to certain files and, you know, documentation he, you know, apparently found, like, you know, lists of actual crew members of interstellar military craft, that kind of thing. And I admit, I'll say right here, I haven't dug too deeply into the whole McKinnon thing. What little I've seen of it, it seemed like there was a lot of leaping from what he actually got and what the assumption of, you know, the interpretation of that
is. Yeah, because this story about his names and shit, I mean, I asked him outright if there were any names, and he said he didn't get any, so I don't know where that came from.
Hmm.
So, that, yeah. I mean, I may have to go back and listen to that interview, but I'm like 99% sure it was like, dude, you have any name, any, you know, anything we could do an FOIA on, you know? And it was like, no. So then it was like, well, what the fuck more do I, what can you do to circle back to these whistleblowers? It's like, what can you do? At some point, all you're doing is just listening to them tell stories. Like, what good is it, dude? I mean, I mean, if you're placated by hearing fucking stories, that's fine. But Jesus, that's not what I'm in this shit for.
It's, to me, it's like pop culture. There are trends. There are things that are popular. You know, back in the 80s, the Rubik's Cube was popular for a while. You know, the Beanie Babies were popular. The, you know, you name it. Yeah, and really, me, that's what these whistleblowers are like. Ooh, it's fun. Ooh,
it gets, for sure.
You know, you start thinking all sorts of fascinating things. But in the end, like you say, they don't offer a damned thing, you know, as regards anything that you know, even if it can be proven to not be true or not be accurate or as I say, falsifiable or not verified, offer some type of documentation, you know, offer something as evidence. Don't just say, here's my testimony, you know, you have to accept this because I'm an earnest, nice guy. Right. That's the other thing they do. They come out with their stuff, and then when people start smelling the BS and start raising the flag and saying, hey, wait a minute, you're full of crap, or when some of their followers are doing things like meme stealing and research lifting and, you know, appropriating other people's work, you know, and you're kind of implying it's their own, and people get tired of that crap, what they do is they retreat into this nicey-nicey, I'm just a quiet little guy. All these people are being mean to me. Corey Good's done that. They're being so mean and attacking me, and I don't understand, you know. And then really their followers are the rabid attack dogs. You know, that's what's going on with the Corey Good thing is there's
like
a bunch of followers that are the attack dogs.
Well, stay the fuck away from me, folks. I don't want anything to do with you people. you know, to me it's like, well, that's the fucked up part, though, because, like, you know, last week we slammed on the UFO consumers, and I always slam on the UFO consumers, and it's like, the people who are consuming this stuff, like this dude, I mean, any of these people, I'm not singling anybody out, the whistleblowers, they're fucking like world building, folks. They're just like crafting this world and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And the fucked up part, I guess, the disturbing part to me, is that, like, there are people who that is their fucking reality now.
Yeah.
You know, that's their reality. I saw a dude on Facebook who genuinely said he was going to vote for fucking Andrew Basiago for president in the last election. So,
really?
Like, anyone who's listening, I don't know, you probably know this, Walter, I'm no fan of Trump, but, like, I'd vote for Donald fucking Trump before I'd vote for Andy Basiago for president. All right? So, like, who the fuck, you know, it's a strange fucking world, folks. It really is. I've seen people that are hand to the Bible believers in this shit, that, mm-hmm. like, that's their fucking worldview, that this Corey Good guy was a toddler astronaut. And so that's where it's troubling to me, that, like, there's no disconnect. There's no, like, oh, he says this, it could be interesting, it could be real. It's just, they fucking just eat it up, bro. It's fucking scary.
Well, yeah, and apparently there's some people that knew him before all this. You know, there's this girl, there's a couple of guys, and they've come out and they said, this is a load of crap. This guy was a blowhard nerd who, you know, the kind of guy that, you know, one of these days I'll be famous and you'll all be sorry kind of thing. You know, and that's kind of the way they characterize him from knowing him, you know, when he was a teenager and in school age and stuff. And, of course, his followers really, you know, they came after those people. And it's almost, and here's the other disturbing thing. It's I'm sure you've heard of the stuff that Daniel List, dark journalist, has put out there that emphasizes the cult-like aspects of this whole Blue Sphere Alliance and the whole Corey Good Blue Avian thing. Oh, that's the other thing. When he goes as a galactic ambassador, okay, when they come to get him for a big powwow up there in the stars, they send a blue bubble, and it envelops him and carries him off to the Galactic Federation station, where he gets all the latest from the bird people, you know, all the cockadoodle-doo. And you know,
got
that,
one
and
question: how the fuck do you breathe in that bubble? You don't.
Well, wait a minute. I have to caveat that, according to Oliver Heaviside, as I said before,
that's true.
Bubble, you know, it could be GEM, gravity. Now you watch. What is today's date? August 1st, 2017, right?
He's going to bring in the GEM. They're going to adopt the GEM.
You watch. After this date, you're going to hear the Corey Good people say, oh, he's been talking about Oliver Heaviside all along. And you know what? Maybe he did mention it before August 1st, but I wrote about it in 2015 in this context. So,
well, I still take issue then with I take issue with Heaviside, too. It's, how the fuck do you breathe in a little bubble like that if you're traveling, like, all the way to Mars? You just can't.
Oh, yeah. You could totally take issue with the Heaviside thing. You could But we're talking about this thing here.
With the co-opting of the whistle.
You know, and the co-opting and the appropriating. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, that's going to be just what we said. You know, Good will say, well, the blue bubble is just like Oliver Heaviside's principle. It's GEM, blah, blah, blah.
And
yet there will be no mention of any, you know, this conversation you and I are having. It's just one of their lackeys or cronies is listening to this, you know, and taking notes. And, you know, that's how that happens. But
well, I hope they're enjoying the show, nonetheless.
Yeah.
We aim to entertain. That's the.
I hope it's entertaining.
Yeah.
And I know I'm not making friends in some circles, you know. And in the interest of disclosure, there's the word.
Ironic.
You know, as far as Gaia TV, we haven't really talked about them much, but I have talked about the stuff that they're backing, like this bullshit mummy thing we haven't even discussed yet. I've been on a Gaia show. I was on Sean Stone's Buzzsaw earlier this year. Probably won't be asked again because I've been so vocal, but, you know, oh well.
Don't worry about her.
Okay.
We're going to hit the live wall in a minute, folks. So thank you to all the people who tuned in. This thing flew by. This was a wild one. We're going to keep going for a while, but you're not going to be able to hear it live. So thanks to Vamp Elvis and John Ostanes and Digger Dog and Alligator and all these different little unnamed guests who showed up in the live chat. And if you want Walter's books, go to lulu.com and search Walter Bosley. Or go to lulu.com/spotlight/lostcontinent, L-I-B, and that'll bring you to Walter's bookstore, where they have all kinds of shit on there, all kinds of good books and stuff. And what else? Walter's on, let me see, give you all the plugs now so people can. He's on Twitter, W.B. Bosley, and just go to my thing, you'll be able to find him. And he's also on Facebook, so. And he's very prolific on the social media. So, I like that.
For better or worse.
You put out interesting shit, you know. At least it's not like people complaining about shit all the time, you know.
Good. Well, I hope it's interesting to some folks. Because I'm being honest. It's sincere. It's not shtick. It's couched in humor.
Well, what I find interesting about all this is, like, is that it's just, I always sort of find the people fascinating and shit. So to me, it's like, it's just fascinating that there's this subculture of secret space enthusiasts. And then there's this, like I said before, like this battle for the soul of secret space research. It's like, who the fuck knew that? Who, you know, if I wasn't on your Twitter thing, I never would have known that there was this sort of like thing erupting. So I'm glad we got you on the show to talk about it, because it's like, this is something that people can look back on in 5 or 10 years, and they'll probably be able to see how this all shakes out. You know what I mean?
It'll be interesting to see. I think part of this, the reason for this is, you know, when the serious UFO researchers, you know, back in the 50s and 60s and or the 70s, when they saw how the New Age contactee folks were, you know, encroaching upon their thing, and then when they saw how it really dug in the 80s, I remember this, Tim. In 1980, 81, 82, you could go into a bookstore, and all through the 70s, of course, you could go into a bookstore up until about 1982 or 3, and you could see the metaphysics section with all the New Agey stuff, okay, all the metaphysical stuff, and there was literally a separate section on UFOs, and it was all, you know, books about this case, that case, nuts and bolts, what are these things, what could they be, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And then by the mid to late 80s, it had all been mashed together, and it became harder to find a nuts and bolts, so to speak, UFO book. There were very few out there. You know, Kevin Randall and Stanton Friedman and them would, you know, they'd write about Roswell, they'd write about, you know, these kinds of, Don Ecker, you know, was a nuts and bolts guy, you know, at that time. But what happened was this whole mystical New Age contactee spiritual thing just totally ate it and absorbed it and tainted it, infected it with the nonsense deeper than it had ever been. And now, you know, when we, you know, us SSP guys, and I humbly include myself in that, I mean, I've spoken at one of the events, I've written 3 or 4 books on this now that involve this, we are seeing this happening to this field that we've been working hard in, and yes, we're going to be vocal. We're not going to let this happen if we can prevent it. You know, Corey Good is not the damned primary advocate of secret space program. That is a load of bullshit that I and others in this field find deeply offensive. And it's just because people with money and big, you know, media sticks are doing this on purpose, and they're just doing it for more money. It's a circus to them, okay? And it's easier to sell a circus of crap that you don't have to prove, you don't have to do any real work or research. It's easier to produce content like that than it is to do the stuff that people like Farrell and Fitz and McCandlish and Schratt.
And you.
And me, you know, have done.
Don't be modest.
That's why it's so frustrating, you know. And then there's The Mummy.
Oh, yeah. The less said about The Mummy, the better. I don't even... Greg and I do this annual, like, top 10 UFO stories. I wouldn't even, like, put that in the 10, you know, like, even the 5 major stories.
Good for you.
Yeah, no, that's a clown show, you know. It's just a clown show. That's, like, the third, that's the second, like, alien little, actually, third, because Stephen Greer had a little alien. That's, like, the third little alien I've seen, like, in 3 or 4 years. So it's, like, you know, nothing, you know, if anyone ever finds a little alien, folks, like, you won't hear about it till, like, they know for sure it's a little alien.
Yeah.
That's kind of a good rule of thumb to use. Like, you know, if you hear about a little alien because some dude found it, like, it's not a little alien.
and even once they know that it is, we still might not hear about it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I just mean, like...
Sure.
For all these people that, like, you know, as much as people like to decry fake news and shit, it's like, I probably won't really believe they found an alien unless, like, National Geographic reports it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, I thought I lost you for a minute. Yeah. I've
just run in my mouth so much in the first 2 hours, I'm trying not to.
There you go. Well, we're jamming now anyway, but yeah. Like, yeah. If somebody finds a little alien, it's... someone of some legitimacy would be like, okay, this is a real little alien. We need to take the steps to, you know, ensure that it's on the up and up and shit, you know.
Right.
So that's why, like, this is maddening in a sense. You see people that some of these stories where it's like, we found a little alien. We're going to tell the world, and then we're going to have it scientifically tested. It's like, no,
exactly.
Dude, like... Have it tested first.
The other thing that some people are doing, and this is very frustrating too, is in the spirit of, I'm with people. I think there's ETs out there. I want them to find one. Disclosure when it happens would be totally cool. I'm all for it. But that doesn't mean I'm going to entertain every bullshit story, and I think bullshit flags need to be thrown in some of these cases. But there's these people out there that say, now, look, you're right, it might be BS, but we have to let them do their whole process before we say that. In other words, we have to play nicey-nicey, you know, until it's proven otherwise, even though, again, without going, you know, off on a tangent on it, we've got The Mummy and Jaime Masson's in there. What more do you need to know, particularly after the Roswell mummy thing, okay? They don't even want people to throw the bullshit flag on it over that. Because they think that, well, in the spirit of wanting to believe, we need to give everybody a chance. So, in other words, Jaime Masson can wheel out one of his bullshit mummies 12 times a year, and we've got to give it respect and attention, you know, every time until proven false. And,
who are these?
You know,
yeah. Well, I don't know who these people are that are saying that, but they're fucking idiots. So, I don't...
honestly, I see it mostly in forums.
Yeah. Well... With all due respect to those folks, they're fucking idiots. Because it's like, if you want to entertain that shit, then go for it. But, you know, to me, there's only one value in that sort of thing, and that's the spectacle of it. Where it's like, look at this. These folks say they found a mummy. You know? Is it an alien? Is it not? I have no idea. Check it out. It looks suspicious, but it's an alien. It's an alien mummy or something. You know what I mean? It's like... But to give them, it's just madness. The whole, as I said, it goes back to, as I said on the other show and earlier tonight, it goes back to the UFO consumer. That's what people want, you know? They want the crazy shit.
Yeah, and you know, my thing is, fine, let there be, I don't think that stuff should not be allowed. Let them have their thing, let them do their thing, but don't let them appropriate you know, the work of serious researchers.
Absolutely.
You know, taint or infect the serious side of the field. You know, do your own thing. Have your little New Age circus show, and, you know, great. More power to you. I hope you make $1 million. But stop with trying to legitimize your bullshit by appropriating the serious research, or you know, stop trying to legitimize by association, you know, and then picking and choosing. Oh, you to go along with this, you'll get to be part of the circus. You guys who call BS on us, you know, we're going to push you down, going to marginalize you. You'll be, you know, there will be no more conferences for you. There will be no more, you know, venues for you. And, you know, that's the thing that a lot of us don't want to see happen.
Yeah, no, I mean, believe me, it's, well, there's a fine line between the people who take this, you know, the folks who are serious about this shit, you know, and who can, like, just laugh at these whistleblowers. I mean, that's all I can do is fucking laugh at them, because it's like, like out of that interview show we mentioned earlier where the girl was like, or the lady, or the woman, excuse me, I don't know what's politically correct anymore. The woman, that definitely is okay, said, she said, like, he's got a lot of big projects coming out, and they triggered the haters because he's going to have a comic book, and it's like, a fucking comic book, dude? Like, really? Like, that tells you everything. That should just tell you everything you need to know, you know? If, like, if you're a whistleblower of a secret space battalion and your avenue is a fucking comic book, like, come on, folks. Do I have to make a drawing for you? Like, it's bullshit, man. It defies common sense.
Yeah, they're using, and the creepy thing is, they're using what are distinctly cult-like tactics, you know, that have been used by New Age gurus in the past and present, to push this agenda. This guy's whole thing, you know, they're using these cult-like tactics to push. Now, I'm cynical about it. I say it's ultimately to just make as much money as they possibly can. And again, that in itself isn't evil, but, you know, we all as human beings, you know, we think that there's validity or whatever, social validity, whatever you want to call it, humanity, and you write a book, you make a product, put it out there on the market, get out there and talk about it, you know, and your intentions are kind of more pure, you know. Hey, you want to make some money, you've produced something that people want, right? But when you get into, you know, fooling with people's belief systems and manipulating their emotions and their psyches, most people say, I don't care how much of a capitalist I am. That's wrong. I don't want to see that kind of crap succeed in the market. And that's, unfortunately, what this whole thing that they're doing with these whistleblowers, and, you know, Good in particular, is smelling like.
Yeah, yeah. Well, to make an analogy for me, it's like my line in the sand, I guess you could say, is just like, in the paranormal world, is like if it has to be more like pro wrestling than a fixed boxing fight, if that makes any sense. There has to be a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. There has to be sort of like an acknowledgement. If you're gonna be kind of like a phony ass and shit and make shit up, then you gotta at least kind of make it so crazy that, like, people know you're kind of like making it up. And if you're, it's hard to sort of, you know, put into words, but I think you can kind of get what I'm saying. And it's like, but a fixed boxing fight's like, well, you're just outright trying to get people to believe something that's not on the up and up. You know?
Exactly. That's something that is underhanded and dishonest and sleazy.
Right,
you know,
right.
Whereas the other thing is just theater.
Exactly. And it's like Weekly World News. It's like, I never got pissed off at Weekly World News. Like, I knew I was in on the joke, you know?
And, you know, the irony here is that Good and them, you know, that type of show, they could make, in my opinion, just as much money, going the wrestling route, where, you know, whether they think people take it seriously or not doesn't matter. And even if they think people would think it's a big joke, they could still make as much money if that's their objective, which means all the more creepiness factor that you get the feeling that they really want to get into people's minds, you know.
To what end, you wonder? Again, to what end? It's very weird.
Well, and then that raises the whole question that others, like, you know, Daniel List and others have asked, who's really behind this guy?
Right,
who's really behind these guys? Which goes back to my option two, that they're being handled either wittingly or unwittingly, cooperatively or, you know, whatever you want to call it. And that's where it gets dangerous, because if there really is somebody behind them, they are the ones with the agenda.
Yeah,
they
for
are,
sure.
They, or will get scary. And
anyone who's like thinks this is like some crazy cloak and dagger shit, it's like, not really, because if one of these, if you're out there spinning yarns about how you were a toddler astronaut, all it takes is like, all honestly, and I'm sure you'll agree with me on this one, Walter, all honestly it would take is like a dude in a suit, or not even in a suit, just a dude who looks like you would fucking believe him, coming up to you at a conference, taking you to the side and being like, I know what all you're saying is bullshit, but some of the things you're saying, you're closer to the truth than you may think. That's all it would take. Like, they're off to the fucking races, dude.
Oh, yeah. Well, another issue I have is, again, with Corey Good or even Basiago, if what they're saying about what they were involved in was true, okay, the reason I say bullshit is because these organizations would have silenced them a long time ago.
Yeah, one would think even, yeah, that's like the old Alex Jones argument in a sense, where it's like, why are you still talking, dude? If you're
exactly,
been,
you know, they
how
they
have you been taking down the New World Order for 20 years?
Yeah, they would have been Danny Casalara a long time ago.
Right, exactly. And one would assume if you were part of the toddler astronauts, and like, I would assume, and you're going to go public with your role in the TRs. You're going to tell somebody off on the QT, and then they'd fucking get you, they'd take you out before you even went public with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because here's the thing.
It's like
one
of the greatest
secrets
ever. They need to keep they're keeping
tabs on
those folks.
One thing I learned after a career being involved with the intelligence community is, and you know, this is my experience, you never know throughout your life and in your life, you never know who around you, okay, on the job or off the job especially, is actually part of the game.
Yeah.
You could have a neighbor that's been part of the game for years and you had no idea. Okay? And so there you are, you know, blabbing your mouth, running certain things. If true, you never know who's listening. And, you know, that I never lose sleep over that. That was just something, you know, that you just get used to. And it contributes to, look, you can either be trusted to keep classified secrets or you can't. And if you can't be, you know, you're playing a very dangerous game on a variety of levels. I have personally, I can't present any evidence. I'm not going to go too far into this discussion. Personally, for me, I'm convinced that a lot of people's weird experiences are real. I'm convinced that the possibility of some nugget of what Good is saying or Basiago is implying in a general sense is possible. Okay, personally, you know, based on personal experiences and stuff, you know, there's some very weird aspects to reality. I think a lot of us have experienced that. I'm not special, okay? But I personally choose not to go public with that stuff. Why? Because my public life, I'm kind of in the business of talking about things that I can present some kind of line of history or some type of documentation or some type of historical thing that I can point to, okay?
Yeah.
And also my personal thing is this. There are some things that happen to you, some things you experience, some things you see, some things that come to you that the reason this happens is because you do keep your mouth shut. I've talked on other shows. There's this thing called the admonition of ISIS where, you know, it's if she lifts her veil and shows you her true nature.
Oh, Jesus. I thought you meant the other ISIS.
Oh, no, not those assholes. That kind of bothers me that they use that.
Yeah, they've ruined ISIS, yeah. I like that old Bob Dylan song, ISIS. You can't even, but,
yeah. When she lifts her veil to show you her true nature, so to speak, you're to tell no one. You're not supposed to share that. It's a very private, personal thing. And for me, I crossed that Rubicon back in 2010. And so for, you know, there's certain things I just don't and won't talk about because, you know, I look at them as, you know, they were intended for me, you know. Now, again, I say I'm not the only guy that's experienced these things by any means. I think there's, you know, I think everybody to some degree experiences something, you know, along these lines. And, you know, some people choose to talk about it and tell the world. You know, I choose not to. So that, the reason I bring this up is that's why it frustrates the hell out of me when people are out there, you know, projecting this stuff and saying stuff that, I'm sorry, just sounds like and smells like bullshit. And, you know they're doing it for the money or you know they're doing it for attention, for whatever. You know,
who knows why they're doing it? Yeah, I mean, who knows why they're fucking doing it?
Yeah, for whatever the reason. And
what's the reason why? What's the reason they give for doing it? Because they want to tell the world. They need to let people know that
there's this line of crap thinking out there that, you know, hey man, you know, who think, for instance,
I lost you.
Intellectual property
me.
Should be free. They think you write a book. They should have a right to have it for free, that this information belongs to everybody, and you're an evil villain if you know something about UFOs that you're not telling. You're an evil villain if you've encountered Hecate and you're not talking the details about that. You're an evil villain if there's something you don't know that you're not telling them. There's people who really, they think that.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, and that tells me they don't know crap about the very thing that's being talked about, because when you look at, and this gets into, you know, an interesting conversation that, you know, the whole nature of the UFO experience, you know, you're talking about, just for example, you're talking about a phenomenon that, you know, they don't want to be, it doesn't want to be disclosed. It doesn't want to be revealed. It wants to reveal itself to all of us on an individual basis. That's not original with me. Other people have said it. You know, we've been in conversations with Greg Bishop and others, and, you know, we've said much the same thing. It's a phenomenon that is selective when it shows itself. And it doesn't really want you going on a radio show and blabbing everything. Now, if you get a byproduct, if these experiences point you to leads that then are material leads that include some type of documented thing, that's okay. Okay? But the actual weird experience that the experiencer has, I personally am convinced and have been convinced that not all of these things should be shared.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, you got to try to resist. Like I said before, I could write two or three times the books if I just wanted to put BS out there. If I wanted to talk about my personal experiences, I could produce twice the books that I do now. That tempts a lot of people.
Yeah,
if I could jump bandwagon and, you know, cater to the people that just want to hear whistleblower experience or stories. But
question for you. I have a point in the question, so. First the question. You don't. I hope you can answer this. You may not be able to. I know you're like privy to classified information, right?
I what?
You were privy to like classified information and shit during your time in the service, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
If you could, you like say, this is all speculative, folks. So I'm being very careful with my words. Because this is sort of like one of those questions, like, if you break out of jail and you're an innocent man, is it still a crime? Could you say, like, that you let's say you wanted to go down that road of, like, these folks who weave stories. Could you say, like, that you were privy to information that, like, was about secret space shit? Would you get in trouble for that, I guess, is the question I'm asking. Like, would the yes. government, the Army or whatever, come to you and be like, okay, stop doing that? Or could you just be I had this classification when I was in the Army, and I know about secret space shit because I saw documents.
Right. Okay. There's a couple of parts to the answer to that. The first one is this. Okay, everybody knows I was an Air Force OSI special agent. Okay, it's kind of like the FBI for the Air Force.
Right.
Okay, while I was at Wright-Patterson, this part is not classified. I can say this.
Mm-hmm.
I was chief of a counter-espionage operations branch. What did we do? We ran double agent operations. Okay, I can say that. That's not classified. What I cannot say are details of those operations. I cannot name names. I cannot identify targets. I can't, you know, I should not go into,
details of shit I can figure out. Yeah, yeah.
The tactics, the tradecraft is what I'm trying to
say. Yeah, means and method or whatever.
It bothers me a little bit when I see accurate tradecraft being put into movies and TV shows. People have asked me, hey, when are you going to write your spy novel or whatever? Because you must not. I'll be honest with you. Part of the reluctance is I just feel irresponsible if I were to do that, because there's people still out there in the field using these things.
Right. A magician does not reveal their tricks.
Yeah. So so there's an example. Now, here's the thing. As a counterintelligence guy, a career counterintelligence guy, during my time in the Air Force, part of your counterintelligence work, when you do it like I did, to the level I did, you get involved in things like program protection. Okay? Now, the OSI had a very special section dedicated. Their full-time job was program protection on the real cool stuff. I was not one of those guys. Those guys are awesome. You know, those are the guys that know what's at Area 51. Okay?
Yeah.
Those are the guys that know all this stuff. That I wasn't one of those guys, but when I was at LA Air Force Base, part of my thing was program protection and also at Wright-Patt, okay? And so you get briefed in on things. Now, I can say, yeah, I was briefed in on program and technology, you know, things and of a certain level, but I cannot tell details. You know, there's things I know about stealth that I'll put it to you this way, even if it shows up in a movie, I cannot say the words because it would be violating my.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. Yeah.
And this happened in the early 90s. There was something on a TV show, specifically Twin Peaks, that blew my mind. I saw it. It was used by a guy who was some type of secret agent. And to this day, I will not even utter, there's an acronym for it, I will not even utter that acronym because when I learned about it, it was in a vault of vaults in counterintelligence training, operational training for the FBI. And it was the last thing that they revealed to us on the final day of training. It was the big grail of our reason. And to this day, even though it's been almost 30 years since it was on a damn TV show, I will not say that because I've never had anybody come to me and say, it's okay to say that now.
Right, right. Interesting.
This is why when people say, oh, they can't keep secrets, that's bullshit. You know, I say, you know what? Obviously, you're either an idiot who's never worked in that classified world or you're one of those dick hairs who's worked in it, but now you're the cocky guy at the party who's, you know, trying to impress chicks and your friends, you know, by saying, oh, you know, they can't keep secrets. It's baloney. You know, they can keep secrets. But so I will say this, just to the level, and I didn't know everything, okay, but to the level that I was briefed on and to the things, speaking to the things I was exposed to very often daily, okay, and trips to the vault and stuff like that, this is why when I speak of an U.S. Air Force secret space program, I speak confidently. And I'll leave it at that.
Oh, wow. All right.
Because these things convince me.
From your time in the service.
My time. Now remember, I was with the FBI, then the Air Force, and then I was a contract consultant guy in the.
Yeah. At some point in that realm, yeah. Well, what about the answer to the question though? Because I'm trying. That this wasn't about you per se. I wasn't saying like that you would that I suspected you did it. What I'm saying is like, is there protection for all of us in the civilian world from someone like a Corey Good who could say I got information? You know what I mean? Like, are they not allowed to say that kind of thing? Do you know what I mean?
If it's true, they're not allowed to say it. Then that's one of my points of contention.
Right? No. Yes. That's my point. On my end, in a sense, where it's like, if let's say I was in the Army,
uh-huh.
and I had like an ultra top secret clearance, and people knew about it because I was the ambassador to China, okay,
right.
All right, so I have a super top secret clearance. Obviously, I need to know all the shit that is involved in that kind of job.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm old, I'm like 70, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna die soon. I want to tell the world about UFOs. And here's all the shit I found out when I was the ambassador to China. But it's all just made up shit.
Uh-huh.
They can't do anything. They can't be like, they could issue a denial, but they couldn't like arrest me for saying.
If you're making crap up and you're not revealing actual classified stuff, really all they can do is say, oh, what a sad end to this poor guy's otherwise distinguished life. You know, here's our denial. None of this
okay,
is true.
Yeah.
And then
so
just,
if you, yeah. So if you were like a grunt IT guy, you could also make up a whole bunch of shit, and they're not going to be like, hey, don't do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, you know, and as far as protecting it, let's say it was true. Now, again, I refer to my recent book, Shimmering Light, okay? I go into in fairly great lengths what I think the Air Force did to my dad in 1958 to suppress his memory of something equally on an astounding possible level as anything Corey Good has said. And I argue that they used MK Ultra type stuff to suppress whatever it was they wanted suppressed that he was involved in, to the extent that the wild story that he told about underground civilizations could have been part of what they used to cover what he was really doing. So in other words, let's say Corey Good really was involved in some type of secret special ops program. All this crap about the Blue Avians and being a space ranger on Mars and being taken at 16 and brought back 5 minutes later, that could all be a bunch of MK Ultra bullshit, what they call a planted narrative. This is in MK Ultra. Look it up. It's in my book, Shimmering Light. A planted narrative of all this wild blue avian, blue sphere crap that they put in his head to suppress whatever it was he actually worked on. This is the hypothetical. If he really was involved in something ultra, you know, secret like this,
yeah.
People have to consider that what he's saying could just be a planted bullshit narrative that it's put in the mind. My dad believed what he was telling me.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Okay? And but it could. I acknowledge. I talk about it in that book. I acknowledge that it could have been a planted narrative, absolutely, to simply cover his role in a much more down to earth, so to speak, U.S. Air Force secret space program.
Yeah.
See. More mundane thing. Oh, let's put this planted narrative in his head so that if he does start talking, he'll talk about this crazy thing about Roswell and this underground civilization, and he'll never talk about secret space program. And we don't care if people think he's crazy. We don't care if his son goes off on this tangent thinking there's an underground civilization. We don't care. As long as, by God, Sergeant Bosley doesn't talk about the secret space program in 1958. You follow me? So
yeah.
If I argue they did that to him with this MK Ultra technology in 1958, think about what they could have done to Corey Good in the late 80s or 90s. Because, folks, when Congress in 1973 forced CIA to reveal their hand what they'd been doing with MK Ultra and kind of made them stop doing it, guess what? They never brought the military before them in a congressional hearing. And the biggest proponent of MK Ultra technology back in the 50s was the United States Air Force, the biggest military branch, that was the most enthused with MKUltra was the U.S. Air Force. And guess what? To this day, the DOD and the U.S. Air Force have never been forced by Congress to admit and reveal how far they took MKUltra technology.
Interesting. The Air Force, it's interesting. That makes me think more, because I've in recent years I've been coming around to the idea that all the shit might be hidden secretly in the Navy somehow. There's some kind of
I think the Navy is if anyone's doing involved in the secret military space program, you're talking the Air Force and the Navy, totally.
Yeah. But it does make you think, like, if they're interested in that kind of shit, if you kind of like pull back the timeline, in a sense, it was like, if they figured out anything from whatever this UFO shit is, I'm sure they figured out that there's a mental component to it, and that would explain sort of like the mental interests.
Yeah, you mean as far as the phenomenon itself and the experience of it?
Yeah. I mean, if you were like an investigatory body and you figured out like, okay, there's this like, something's happening in the mind of people when they see this thing, then it's like, then you would immediately like, we need to know more about the mind. You know what I'm saying?
What if there's one source for all of these? Let's keep it simple. For all the modern UFO era, okay, let's call it 20th century, and more specifically, starting with Kenneth Arnold in 1947, blah, 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 everything. What if there's only one source of this? What if they have the technology to get into and scan, so to speak, to scan the mind of the observer, right? And find out what their prejudices are.
Oh, yeah.
You know, spiritual prejudices.
Or
find out what their interests are, okay?
Right.
And then what they do is they are able within they are able to make that observer see them through that filter. And what if this is a technology? In other words, you know, if the observer is aroused about in a circus or a carnival, you know, they're able to make their ship in the mind of that observer. The observer thinks they're seeing a carousel or a big top tent. They don't actually.
Oh yeah,
see
yeah. Well, let me put it in words that might resonate with listeners, because if anyone's listening to this and going, what the fuck is this guy talking about? That's crazy. I want you to go to, like, your favorite fucking website, because the ad on the side is a cookie-based ad based on all the shit you look at online. So, like, mm-hmm. we're already doing that. We're doing that to people now. So the idea that this intelligence could be doing it to us on a far more advanced level makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and let's say the observer is a goth, you know, it's like a goth rocker person that's really into vampires.
Yes, they have all those cookies.
The UFO makes itself look like, you know, a bat, a big giant bat. They reach into the mind of the observer, and they make the observer think they're seeing whatever entertains that observer's imagination the most.
And that's why, in a way, they, like, couldn't. If that's, like, really what it is, it's like they couldn't even have disclosure because they couldn't, like, explain it. But, like, if somehow it happened, everybody would be seeing different shit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's why we can't figure it out anyway, because everyone's seeing different shit, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, no, I'm in total agreement on that. I think it's, like, there's something. The only thing I take issue with, in a sense, is the word technology, because to me it's, like, I wonder if it's, like, some natural thing. You know, just some natural...
A grasp on some type of natural function, sure.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it is. You know, there's also the issue of, witnesses will be looking at something, a UFO, for example. They'll be looking at it, and it looks distinctly, it has these features and such, and one of them is capturing it on, you know, their video camera, but yet when they go to the video, it doesn't show up in the video like it looked to their eye.
Right, yeah.
As if perhaps there's something about the nature of the craft, or either a byproduct of the nature of the craft or part of the technology, and they're jamming the signal to where you cannot capture it visually. There's that interesting possibility, too.
Yeah, for sure. It's I've enjoyed this conversation a lot because we've just been speculating. We can go like another – they're going to cut me off at the three-hour mark, so we can go like another like 15 minutes if you're cool.
That'll be good for me because I got to allow people to have access to the kitchen again.
Oh, shit. That's entirely possible. I've often likened this to like the weather in a sense. It's like if we were like cavemen, we wouldn't really understand how all these different clouds take shapes and shit. But there's actually there will eventually be some explanation for all this shit that'll fit into like that will make sense.
but here's the thing.
I hope
there may not ever be that public explanation before everybody. The explanation might only come perhaps when you die.
I was just going to – you took the words literally right out of my mouth because I thought you were going to say like, or it may never happen. And I was going to respond that it probably – you know, I hope – go back to that. I hope that it does happen when you die. Like, that's the one
Which
thing that keeps me from fearing death and also kind of like looking into this shit where it's like, I really hope once I die I get to find out the answers to all this shit.
Well, you know, and the other and what does that do? That makes you step back and think, well, then, you know what? Wait a minute. If that's the truth, what is the real meaning of this life? Maybe it is just to, and I'm going to sound cheesy here, and I hate to even admit this caveat, damn it, because I like the mystical adventure life. But, you know, what if the purpose of this existence, if you find out all this stuff when you die, is the purpose of this existence in, you know, the personal interactions with the friendships and the familial relationships and how you carry yourself as a human being, is this life really, truly maybe all about, you know,
being normal?
Those kinds of, being normal and, you know, living a normal life instead of pursuing all these mysterious secrets if you find out when you die? You know, I've contemplated that, and I thought, damn, I would go nuts if I thought life was just supposed to be a normal life.
Yeah, you just kind of blew my mind there in a way. Because it's like, when I think about it that way, because I've always sort of hung my hat on the idea that, like, at least what I'm doing is somewhat noble in a sense, where it's like I'm asking the big questions of life. And then you think about it, and you're right. Maybe you get there on the other side, and they're like, you weren't supposed to be trying to figure this all out. You were just supposed to be, you know, having babies and shit.
But
you got to go back.
Here's the big caveat to that. I think our nature is such that if that were the case, we would not have this driving curiosity inside of us.
That's true.
This gut instinct, this sixth sense that there's more to just this material, ho-hum, mundane existence. So I think really these others that are with us and have been with us all along, I think they want us to expand our perception of full reality, and this is why they lead you along. Now, here's the thing. If what your objective is to stand on a stage in a spotlight in front of a microphone or in front of a TV camera and tell everybody, you know, about these experiences, then if that's not the point of those things being revealed to you, then you will cease to learn. Will cease to show you. They will cease to guide you along. You know, so you kind of, it's a discipline. You kind of have to accept that, you know, if your objective is the knowledge, if your objective is to know these secrets and these things, I'm speaking for myself, you have to give up being famous for it, so to speak. You have to, again, when she lifts her veil to show you her true nature, in other words, to show you more of reality, you tell no one. And here's why. It's not that you're being some selfish, you know, elitist maniac. It's because when that happens, okay, when she lifts the veil, okay, and shows you these things, it means that you, in your life, your personal path, you have made it to a point where you've reached that
exactly.
threshold.
Yeah, exactly. It's disrespectful
you've earned that.
To say,
now,
yeah.
Well, right. All the description of what you've seen that you give in words or write in a book is not going to be the same as that person experiencing it for his or herself.
Right, right, right.
No way. So what you're doing is you're kind of spoiling what they're supposed to find on their own.
Exactly. Path. That's why they can't have disclosure. They can't. Yeah.
Yeah. Just, so
it has to
so,
be a transformational experience for, like, the whole planet.
Yeah. Yeah, now when it comes down to, you know, there was a time in this planet where people living on this continent didn't know about people living on that continent. Oops, one of these days, you know, one day the ship showed up on the shore and, oh, now we got to deal with that reality. Okay, when that day comes, it will come, okay? But I think what people are experiencing here that they're insisting, you know, disclosure will solve it all and answer all the questions, I think they're misinterpreting it. I think Jacques Vallée, 30-some, 40 years ago, figured that out. And there's people who still don't want to hear that. They want it to be E.T. and they want it to be little grays. And, by God, they want their disclosure. And they're missing
the simplest, like, base level, the argument against that whole thing anyway is, like, if it was that fucking easy, I think they would have told us.
Yes.
It's not, like, not even, you know, if you think about it, if you really think about it, it's like, that's pretty cut and dry, and they've clearly primed us for that announcement. So, like, what the fuck, you know, where is it? Obviously, there's more to it than that.
Yeah, I think there's more to it than that.
Because, like,
I
can buy, like, the whole idea, not to jump on you, but I can buy the whole idea of, like, the slow disclosure with pop culture and shit. But it's like, even in that scenario, I think we were good to go, like, in the 70s. Like, we don't need another 40, you know? You don't need, like, you don't need, what, 70 years of prep for this? Sorry.
Right, right, exactly.
Unless
exactly.
It's truly, like, beyond fucking aliens.
Yeah, well, and there you go. It could be beyond fucking aliens. It could be something that, you know, isn't that simple.
Right,
and
that's what I'm saying, yeah.
And yet it's so entwined with our existence that most people aren't aware of that's where the shocker comes from.
Yeah, I mean, that would freak people out, I think, if it was like, if the other, as we've discussed it, like, it's one thing if it's aliens and they're coming here in spaceships. Another thing if it's like, there's like an intelligence that exists in the fucking ether around you, like Wi-Fi. You know, like, people would freak the fuck out.
Yeah, they would. They would. And you know, you probably know by now, anybody that listens to me long enough or sees my comments, I am anti-collectivism. I despise the hive Borg mentality. I'm disgusted with this concept that we're just all part of one big universal consciousness and
oh,
no,
yeah, I don't like that shit either.
No. We each are individual beings, individual sentient beings, okay? Now, we're of a particular species, but we each, and I think what we're talking about tonight, right now, is kind of evidence for what I'm saying. The fact that each person's experience is meant for them, and one person, you could have five people experiencing the same UFO and have five different experiences, you know?
Yeah.
I think that right there is evidence against this collective hive mentality. But there's a bunch of what I call newbies. This is probably their first time. I'm a reincarnationist. I don't debate it. I don't discuss it. I've been convinced a long time ago we reincarnate. Okay, so that said, I think that these people that embrace the hive, the collective, that we're all part of one consciousness, to me, these are people, I don't care what they think or what they say, to me, this is their first time incarnating, okay?
Yeah.
And, you know, it scares the hell out of them. So they want to cling to something so they have this togetherness because being an individuated physical person or being scares the hell out of them.
Now you're scared the fucking hell out of me, dude. You just dropped this on me with, like, we have, like, 10 minutes to go. See, that's terrifying.
Oh,
because we're seeing,
you know,
we're seeing a shift here in the culture where it's, like, there's more of that.
Yeah.
I don't like that shift in the culture,
right,
personally. So, to me, it's, like, I'm getting frightened in the sense where it's, like, because
I
see this current young generation, not to sound like old man yells at cloud, but it's, like, I don't, you know, this idea of, like, when they get around to run. Oh, well, we said that about my generation. Nothing's changed, so I think the old axiom
that
of
thing goes on. And you know what? That's part of the process of of wisdom and learning more. It's not that you can discount it because other generations have done it before. As a matter of fact, it verifies, it gives validity to what we're saying because every generation has done this before. That must mean something, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't even know. I started going off on a tangent, but I forget what I was saying. But it was just sort of like, yeah, this. I was getting scared that this young generation is going to turn us into a hive people. But then I remembered the old axiom that it's like you're a liberal in your 20s and a conservative in your 30s. It's like by the time they get to be old enough to like start kicking their fellow millennials off the boat for their own well-being, then they'll get an idea of how the real world works. So I'm hoping that's the case.
Exactly. We're talking about these newbies I'm talking about. These are the people that are just really, they love to discuss consciousness. And, you know, I like to joke about this. There's nothing that bores me more than a discussion on consciousness. To me, it's a newbie that says, oh, we're conscious. We're conscious. Hey, everybody, we're conscious beings. To me, the advanced being, the advanced person that's been around a few times, it's like, yeah, we're conscious. Get over it. Now, it's what you do with that consciousness that counts. But get over the fact that you're a conscious being. You know, put your big boy pants on and just
start getting conscious. You there?
Quit talking about it so much, you know. It's
right,
not that.
Right.
It's a big deal, but it's not, you know. But,
no. I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. I think we're in agreement. Young people are the worst.
They are. Damn them. Get off my lawn.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know what you mean. Yeah. It's weird. I was going to mention this thing I posted on Twitter. Now I can't find it. We were talking about sort of the attitude of some of these people in this thing. Let me see if I can get it on here. I wrote, let me save it here. We're going to get going in a minute or two. Don't worry about that. Somebody wrote an email to, like, some other show that I follow on Twitter, and they were, like, bitching at them because they have, like, a 30-minute intro where the guys just kind of shoot the shit, and then they bring on the guest.
Yeah.
And the guy wrote, like, a nasty fucking email to them, and was like, hey, man, you know, I don't want to listen to this intro. You gotta put the interview up front. That's bullshit. You got to put the interview up front. And one of the lines in the guy's email was, share the knowledge, man.
Oh, I hate that.
And I posted to Twitter, share the knowledge, man, in quotes, then hyphen, the clarion call of the paranormal asshole.
Yeah, perfect. Exactly.
You know.
Yeah. But they'll you piss them off enough. I'm convinced somebody who was pissed off at me was probably the source of one of my books being hacked and then put out there as a PDF for free. It wouldn't surprise me if it's somebody I pissed off. I'll show him. I'll, you know, put his new book out there and it'll be out there for free. Like, okay, whatever, you know, on to the next one.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's frustrating, but I have to admit that, you know, I probably pissed someone off.
Oh, yeah, believe me, I know for a fact that I pissed somebody off last week. So, so you know, you piss people off. That's how you know you're doing a good job in this crazy field. So,
I hope so.
Yeah. But, yeah, that is the clarion call of the paranormal asshole. That's how you
Excellent.
Know, folks. So, yeah, I've heard that. So many times. There's no, you know, there's no fucking obligation, dude. Nobody has any obligation to do anything in this field. It's bullshit. And anyone who says, you know, anyone who thinks that you owe them something brings nothing to the table, I find. You know what I mean? Whoever the fuck wrote this email to that podcast, like, I guarantee he don't have a fucking podcast. He doesn't even
right.
have a fucking blog, you know?
Well, you know, here's what they don't understand, the people who, again, think everything should be free. Here's the deal. Yeah, this knowledge that I put in my books, you can find it. Go out there, do the research. You can find it, you know. But what my book is the product of my research and analysis. It's my take. It's the fruit of my labor. And for me to be able to continue doing this, I have to sell the books, you know, to, you know, kind of buy my food and pay the electric bill and be able to do these things. So it's not that I'm trying to keep the world's secrets away from the people, man. It's that, you know, I got to get something for my time.
Exactly,
it represents my time distilling this for the consumer's enjoyment or enlightenment, and they don't get that. They because a lot of them are younger, you know, and they live in this world where they're subsidized by their parents, and they don't have, you know, they have all sorts of time to game, and they think that's what writers and stuff and researchers are living under the same circumstances, that they can just spend all their time doing this and just give it away, and they haven't hit the brick wall of life yet.
Yeah. Well, let's hope they do soon.
Yeah. It's good
and
for them.
Speaking of Walter's books, you can find them at lulu.com/spotlight/lost continent lib. Once again, lulu.com/spotlight/lost continent lib, L-I-B. And he's also on Twitter, W.B. Bosley, and on Facebook as well. So just punch his name. So, and read the books. And read the books.
And yes, you'll find a variety of interesting characters on my Facebook and Twitter friends list.
Yeah, Walter and I are mutual friends with quite the extraordinary young woman.
Yes, yes, and I'm jealous. You got the follow.
I know. You got to stop trying to get her attention. She'll fall. You have to do it after that.
I know. I think I get the polite, you know. Arms reach, you know, they mentioned me once, but, you know, anyway, it's a lot of fun.
It's fun. That's an almost an off-the-air conversation, but yeah, for sure. Well, I enjoyed this, dude. I could honestly, if they didn't shut me off at 3 hours, I could probably keep this going for like 5 or 6. That's how much I'm enjoying
this
conversation.
Well, let's do it again.
We will definitely do it again. I really do appreciate it. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I gave folks all the places to go. Get the books. Thank you, man, for being so candid, and hopefully we don't get sued by any of these people from the whistleblower community. But
We shouldn't. They're public figures.
They are public figures, so hopefully we'll – and my brother's a lawyer, so I should be all right.
Oh, there you go. Cool. We're good. Well, thanks for having me on, Tim. I really appreciate you giving me your time and the audience's time. So,
I appreciate it, man, because you know something? I'll pontificate here a little bit at the end. It's like the people – like I said before – and you said earlier about how the UFO community doesn't really look at this secret space program stuff, and I have not myself. And following you on Twitter, I was seeing all this turmoil and stuff in the community, and I was like, A, holy shit, there's a community, and B, they're in turmoil. I need to know more about this. And, you know, a lazy-ass podcaster would go, well, I'll get Corey Good on. He's the face of this shit. But it's like clearly there's a lot more going on under the surface, folks. That we explored tonight that I think actually should enlighten people. So now when they see names and shit of people out there, they'll be like, okay, I know what's going on now. He's from the whistleblower camp. He's from the serious research camp. So we tried to do our part to illuminate people on this whole thing and dig into the secret space program as well. So thank you, man. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good night.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. There you go. I got 5 minutes to wrap up the show here. Big thanks to Walter Bosley. We hit the wall last week with Jack Brewer on the near 3 hour mark, and I think we passed it. We easily passed it tonight because I'm going to be in a real bind to wrap up the show. So thanks to Walter Bosley. And I remember what I said. I really could have probably kept going for like another hour here talking about stuff. That's how much I enjoyed the conversation. Very open minded, but at the same time speculative. Which is what I like a lot. And I got to, like, throw all kinds of crazy ideas out there and shit. And I wanted to make the point to Walter while we were talking that I was trying to belabor the point about whether or not somebody could make shit up and say they learned it from being in the Army just to sort of get the point across to people that, like, if somebody's saying a bunch of shit just because they have the credentials doesn't mean that the credentials actually verify what they're saying. And no one would actually stop them from saying it. So that's worth considering and thinking about as you hear testimony from people going forward. What else is going on? I'm incredibly tired, and I need to go to bed, and it's almost midnight here on the East Coast. I want to mention I've got a crazy picture up on my Facebook page of me and the illustrious Adam Gorightly in costume because last night I was in Dunstable, Mass., with the crew from Bright Rectangle Films, filming a scene for their forthcoming movie, The Hill and the Hole, which stars the one and only Adam Gorightly in one of the feature roles. And they were filming so close to BOA HQ that Adam And apparently the filmmakers are Banal of America listeners, so I'm hoping that they're tuning in right now. Christopher Ernst and Bill Darman. They're the guys behind Bright Rectangle Films, and they're making The Hill in the Hole, and they filmed a bunch in New Mexico, and they filmed they're filming this week in Mass, and I went up to Dunstable. And Adam, the friend that he is, got me I wasn't just an extra in The Hill in the Hole. I'm a speaking role. So I have a cameo role in the movie The Hill in the Hole that will be coming out sometime in 2018. And I play the role of Tiny. I have one line, and me and Adam work in a dough truck. That's pretty much all you need to know. And I have an awesome picture of me and Adam in costume on set at the taping of the Hill in the Hole movie. So I'm looking at it right now. That's why I'm distracted. It's quite the picture. And, yeah, so I want to thank the guys from Bright Rectangle Films, Christopher Ernst and Bill Darman. They are awesome. I really do appreciate it. And William McLean, who played my co-worker Zeke in the scene. We had a lot of fun, a lot of laughs. It was really quite the experience. And I'll talk more about it eventually when the movie comes out or something. We'll do a show with the guys from Bright Rectangle Films and The Hill in the Hole. It really was awesome. So I can't thank them enough for having me out on set last night to tape this thing and to be a part of the movie. It's going to be really cool. I cannot wait to see this movie. So, and now I can be in consideration for an Oscar, which is always nice. And we're going to run out of time in less than a minute. Oh, shit. No new episode next week or the week after. I'm going to Canada on vacation. I'll be back in 2 weeks. So, what is that? 8:21 or something like that. Stay tuned to Banal of America. I'll post a message there. And I will post a message on Facebook and all that stuff. And that's it. So, I'll be back in a couple weeks with a whole bunch of new episodes. I'm on vacation to Canada. I'll post the info on Banal of America. Shit. I'm running out of time. Good night. Talk to you in a couple weeks, guys. Bye-bye.